The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
In your head, you always imagine the revolution, when it starts, will start with tanks and gunfire, with chaos and soldiers in the street. You'll know when it comes. But it never does. Instead, the really big changes to American life, the profound ones that affect all of us forever, those changes almost always begin quietly with gentle pleas for tolerance. We'd like to do things a little differently, they tell you. We'd like to make a change to some custom or belief that people have been attached to for the last few thousand years. But don't be alarmed. It's not a big deal. You don't even need to participate. All we ask is that you let us live the way we want to live. That's always the pitch. And of course, you always agree to it. Why wouldn't you? Who could say no to that? Some guy down the street wants to wear a dress? Okay, fine. Have a party. It doesn't affect you. You don't have to wear a dress. So go ahead. Live and let live. But it turns out that's never actually the deal. The guy down the street wears his dress, but after a while, that's not enough for him. He's still angry. And for some reason, he's angry with you. And that doesn't make sense because you're the person who had no problem with him wearing a dress in the first place. What did you do wrong? Well, the problem is you're not wearing a dress, and neither are your kids. Your normal person clothes, the ones you've always worn, are suddenly immoral. You've got to change immediately.
That's Tucker Carlson from last week talking about the movement of the revolution, how that it starts small, it starts slowly, but now you see where we are today. I just thought that was a fascinating clip because in America Under Attack, we make the point that Satan's using the same tactics today to destroy the nations of Israel, the same tactics that he used to destroy the church, spiritual Israel. And many of us lived through that back in the late 1980s and the early 1990s when they made these subtle changes in church teaching and church doctrine and then said, it's not a big deal. It's not. Look, really, you don't even have to observe this if you don't want. You can still believe what you've always believed. And most of God's people just went right along with that for years. Until finally, in the mid-1990s, they came right out and said, this is a complete and total, a fundamental transformation. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining our growing audience. As you know, you can get to the live audio stream of this show through CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on that platform. To get to the live video stream, though, you've got to go to our website, our very own website, thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live, and that takes you right to the live stream page. We broadcast live every weekday morning here in central Oklahoma, 11 a.m. in the central time zone. That's 11 a.m. every weekday morning, and we are happy to be back in our Edmond studio after nearly 2 weeks off, I guess about a week and a half as far as broadcasting goes. Special thanks to all of the individuals who subbed in. I think most of those messages over the last week and a half were pre-recorded. In any event, we kept the message going out. As for me personally, it was nice to have a break away from the daily, the intense daily activity, at least every morning of the weekday, as we hurriedly try to pull together information clips and Bible studies for this daily show. We were away at the Feast of Tabernacles and the Last Great Day, and we were envisioning the future, a time when the world, God's world, will be firmly established on this earth, and what a different world it will be from the one we see today. I made the point in one of my messages, just think about the Trumpet Daily in tomorrow's world, in God's world, in the wonderful world of tomorrow. God, as I'll show you in just a little bit, God is a God of life and growth. He's a God of productivity. Just imagine the headlines of tomorrow And how they contrast with the headlines of today. Today, I mean, in journalism newsrooms, there's the saying that if it bleeds, it leads. They lead with blood. They lead with violence. They lead with all kinds of evil and filth. It's on the nightly news every single day, over and over again. And, of course, on this program, in exposing the devil's works, in exposing his fingerprints on all of this evil. I mean, we do have to, especially in the first segment, we do have to cover a lot of times some pretty negative things, some negative subjects and themes. But what a difference it will be in the world tomorrow. What a difference the news sources on the internet or on TV or wherever. How different will they be in the wonderful world tomorrow? I was telling my wife on one of our trips, we spent time in Wyoming and Montana. There are still beautiful parts of this country, still fairly well intact. The cities are, of course, falling apart right before our eyes. But in Wyoming, in Montana, and then later on in Arizona, you still see some beauty. But in the midst of some of our travels, I was just telling my wife both of us were going through The Wonderful World Tomorrow book by Herbert Armstrong, and I was telling her about how many prophecies there are describing the wonderful world tomorrow, the major prophets, the minor prophets. I mean, it's all through the Bible, and God, he just works so hard to help us see the future, to help us envision the future. So much detail in the book of Isaiah or Ezekiel or Joel or Amos. Just pick your prophecy, pick your prophet, and there's likely to be a pretty lengthy section or multiple sections in that book describing the world tomorrow. And of course, those prophecies, they weren't fulfilled in ancient Israel. And so think about how many people in the world of traditional Christianity today, they just dismiss those prophecies, just like they do with respect to the return of Christ. More than 100 prophecies in your Bible that speak to that. And yet people don't believe it. People just assume that, well, all that we have is this world, and we just have to try to make this world a little bit better. We've just got to try to get our political party in power in this world, and then everything, it's like a utopia. Yeah. We will build a utopia. And God's response to that is, no, that's going to be my doing. That happens after the return of Jesus Christ. The God family is going to build a new civilization, a new world. Now, that's something we need to set our minds on regularly, because this world, it's so negative, so depressing. There's not a lot of positive news in the world today. You look at the abomination of desolation in God's church that happened through the late 80s and early 1990s. And now we see the same thing playing out in our nations today. This is a quote from America Under Attack. I've got that under the stack here. As if I haven't plugged this book enough. It came in the mail just back in August. If you don't have your copy yet, make sure that you call our operators. The number's there at the lower third of the screen. Call our operators today and request America Under Attack, the toll-free number. If you live in the U.S. or in Canada or in the Caribbean, it's 1-866-930-3024. My father writes, when Satan attacked God's church in this end time, he got people in at the top who cast the truth to the ground. You can see that prophecy over in Daniel 8. My father says, Satan has used the same tactics when attacking America and the modern-day nations of Israel. This explains the onslaught against America's founding, history, principles, and purpose coming from such high-placed leaders. It says, this is the most efficient and potent way to destroy from the top down. It says the devil can use those leaders to wage an assault from within on the truth and the law. So he's got, in this communist infiltration, that prophecy, he was right, that prophecy from Herbert Armstrong, going back to the 1940s and 50s, you can read about that in the booklet, He Was Right. But he's gotten leaders, he's installed his leaders right at the very top, and look at the damage that they're causing. Again, as Tucker explained last week, it starts small. They just come forward with the message of, hey, live and let live. You live the way you want, and let us live the way we want. And nobody gets harmed that way. Well, now look at how aggressively they're working to dismantle the foundation of the nation, to fundamentally transform the United States of America. Listen to a bit more from Tucker last week, clip two.
You've got to change immediately. Whoa, wait a second, you say? That's not what we agreed to. You do your thing and I'll do mine. Remember? They don't remember. They don't care. That's not how it works. You don't get to do your thing anymore. The dress guy's in charge now. Everybody's got to do his thing, the dress thing, or face punishment. That's how it goes. Be tolerant becomes show some respect, which evolves very quickly into bow down before us and lick our feet or else we'll hurt you. That's the final stage. That's where we are now.
And in the spiritual sense, that's a pretty good description of the way that it happened in God's church. And you can read much more about this in Malachi's message. And, of course, Raising the Ruins has all those details that we were able to get through discovery in our six-year lawsuit to obtain the rights to Mystery of the Ages. Remember, they went from changes, what changes? We're not making any changes, to in 1996 or 97 saying, we want to keep Mystery of the Ages, Herbert Armstrong's final book. His best book, we want to keep it out of print. We have a Christian duty to do that. That's what happened in less than 10 years. This is from a letter from Joe DeCotch Jr. He spearheaded the movement to fundamentally transform the worldwide Church of God, Herbert Armstrong's church. God's church, but God raised it up through Herbert Armstrong. Tikach Jr. said in 1991, first, you see, he's writing a member who was upset about the changes in the church, and he says, first, you seem to think that we are trying to undermine the work that God did through Mr. Armstrong. Nothing could be further from the truth. That's 1991. This is 5 years after Herbert Armstrong died, and Joe Tikach said in a letter, a personal letter to someone, we're not trying to undermine Herbert Armstrong's work. No. No, not at all. We're carrying on the work of God according to God's will as well as Mr. Armstrong's instructions. He says, on his deathbed, Mr. Armstrong commissioned my father to reevaluate the very changes in understanding that have since come to light. So he goes on and says, we're just following Mr. Armstrong's instructions. So Mr. Armstrong's responsible for all of these changes, all of these doctrinal changes, these new teachings. That's all that we're doing. We're submitting to Mr. Armstrong's will. Even on his deathbed, my father was there, Tikach Sr., presumably, was there. He's just writing down all these instructions from Herbert Armstrong. You look, make this change, and you'll be on the right track. This is what Joe Tikach Jr. was telling people. As late as 1991 and 1992. This is on page 65 of his book, Transformed by Truth. Now, that came out in 1997. That's when they finally said the silent part out loud. Yeah, we had this. I mean, this was a plan from the beginning to fundamentally transform the church. He says, though, in the book, just before he died in January 1986, Herbert Armstrong told his handpicked successor, my father, Joseph Tikach Sr., that changes needed to be made in the church. He says, what things might have he intended? We can never be sure. See, in 1991, he said, well, Herbert Armstrong, he told us exactly what to change. And then he begins to roll that back in 1997. He says, you know, Mr. Armstrong said a few changes needed to be made, but we can't be sure what he meant by that. Here's another letter. This is from 1992. Joe DeCotch Jr. said, "We are happy to explain our beliefs to anyone who asks. We are not, however, going to force our views on anyone." No, we would never do that. We would never impose our will on someone else. We're not like that. We don't rule with an iron fist. This is from 1997, the church's website. Thomas Hansen wrote in this article titled, "Lay Pastors Equipped in Intensive Sessions." And he quotes Mike Fizell. He was another top evangelist in that church that helped to dismantle the entire organization and all of their fundamental beliefs. Fizell's quoted as saying at that conference, "God does not force himself on us. He will come into our lives only when we ask him to." So we're not heavy-handed here. That's from 1997. Listen to what Mike Fizell wrote in his book. This is from 2001, so 4 years later. He said, "If you take the pressure off, people will revert to their old behavior. People tend to hope the crisis will just go away. If we were to stop teaching the changes right now and invite members to go back to the old doctrines, I'm convinced that a certain percentage would do so." I mean, they had to keep the pressure on, or else the members would just revert back to the teachings of Mr. Armstrong, said Fizell. Switching over to Transformed by Truth, this is Takach's book, Takach Jr. Again, this is from 1997. He says, "So after all the doctrinal changes of the past few years, here's where we stand. Close to 70,000 people remain with us." Well, he talks about the tens of thousands that left. I'm sure they have nowhere near 70,000 today. But he doesn't mind. He ran off with all the assets of the church. This is from Fizell's book, again, 2001. He says, "The painful reality of a changing church is that not all members stand together during the process. The Worldwide Church of God has experienced a profound change in identity and mission." And keep in mind, in the late 80s, they were saying, "We're not making any changes." Then in the early 90s, they said, "Well, we've made a few changes, but we're only doing what Mr. Armstrong said to do." And then in the mid-90s, they said, "Well, Mr. Armstrong said to make a few changes, but we don't know what he meant by that." And then 97, "Yeah, we've transformed the church. Herbert Armstrong was a heretic." That was Takach Jr. That's basically what he said in his book. That's a one-sentence synopsis of the entire book. "We changed everything, and he's a heretic. He was the leader of a cult." It started out, you think the revolution starts with the tanks rolling down the streets, as Tucker said. But that's not how it began, not in spiritual Israel, and it's not the way the revolution started here in physical Israel, the physical nations of Israel as well. That's why you got to get He Was Right out and see how Herbert Armstrong was saying from the very beginning, look where this communist infiltration is leading. Who can forget the classic quote from 1956? Herbert Armstrong saying, and in the end, it results in the overthrow of the government. This infiltration into academia, into popular culture. And now they're leading the insurrection. Even as they say Donald Trump and his supporters are insurrectionists, you turn on Morning Joe, and it's still, for the most part, all things Trump. Donald Trump's been out of the White House for almost 2 years. And still, there's books coming out about Trump. Trump being like Hitler. Trump being this. Trump being that. Where are all the books about the Biden crime family, by the way? There's, I guess, one or two. But the dozens and dozens of books that nobody buys, by the way, about the bad orange man. They're obsessed with destroying their enemy. It's not enough to beat him at the election. You've got to destroy him. This is, again, Mike Fizell. "The Worldwide Church of God has experienced a profound change in identity and mission, including change from a one-man dominated ministry to the ministry of all believers." It says, "The pain has been enormous." He describes Mr. Armstrong as a one-man dominated ministry. Listen to this. It says, he says, as I have said before, an ironic dynamic is that change of such magnitude virtually demands a hierarchical, authoritative form of church government. In other words, Fizel said in the same paragraph, he talks about Mr. Armstrong as this one man dominated ministry. And then he goes right on to say in the very next breath, or in the very next typing on the computer, the very next sentence, he goes on and says, now, it is ironic here that we couldn't have pulled this off, this fundamental transformation, without one man-dominated work. That's right. Tkach gets in there, along with Fizel. I mean, it's Joshua and his fellows, Zechariah 3. Read 2 Thessalonians 2. I mean, we're talking about a man of sin. That's how evil this movement was. Isn't it ironic? We did have to hang on to that hierarchical form of government, even as we were changing all these other fundamental beliefs. And this is the way the communists work today. It's like my father says in America Under Attack. We're seeing what they're willing to do to maintain their grip, their stranglehold on power. To them, power is everything. Because that's how they complete the fundamental transformation. My father writes, this is America Under Attack, this is a core characteristic of the work of a Satan-inspired Antiochus. The Antiochus figure prophesied in Daniel 8 is a lawless man. He is unconstrained by the law of God and even by the laws of man. Instead, he follows the dictates of his own will, which is tragically inspired by the devil. It's will worship. You just do what we tell you to do. Never mind the Constitution. Never mind the law of the land. Listen to Barack Obama as he talks about how much his administration, he's really the administration, he's really the president. Joe Biden's just the puppet. But here he is praising the Biden administration for how much it has accomplished these first 2 years. Listen to this, clip 7.
The Biden administration has accomplished a lot. You've got a historic infrastructure bill that's going to help rebuild America and create jobs all across the country. You've got a gun bill that is the first major piece of gun safety legislation that we've seen in 30 years. Across the board, what we've seen is that when Democrats have a working majority or even a really slim majority in Congress, they can make people's lives better.
They're making people's lives better, says Antiochus. Yeah, this is what they want. All the polls are talking about a red wave coming. The only question, I guess, at this point is how big the red wave will be in 3 weeks. And they are internally, they're panicking. I mean, they're coming out now saying, we're the party of abortion. We want your support so that there's no restrictions on abortion, not even up to the very end of the pregnancy. That's who we are. We are the party of death. Vote Democrat. They are scrambling. They were trying to incite the violence from the right. They tried to incite a civil war in the hope that they could do something dramatic. Nothing has worked for them. But still, you hear them talking about what's happened these last 2 years, the wide open border, all the young people in America dying from fentanyl overdoses, the crime in the cities, the runaway inflation, costs for food, fuel, gas, everything. And he's there saying, yeah, I think we're making lives better. This exchange, you guys can skip ahead to the Peter Strzok section. This was on MSNBC, I believe. Nicole Wallace talking about January 6th. I mean, the theme continues. The storyline continues. The narrative that won't go away. Never mind what every poll is telling you about what Americans are actually concerned about. Here's Nicole Wallace and Peter. Remember Peter Strzok and his dismissal letter? The FBI fired him. He's a disgraced former FBI agent. He headed up the Get Trump wing of the FBI. He went, when he drove by Walmart, he could smell the Trump voters. Listen to this exchange about January 6th. This is clip 9.
I've not heard one utterance of connecting the dots from Christopher Wray in the days after the deadliest attack on the U.S. Capitol in our, you know, in history.
Nicole, I think that's right. And I think if you look at the scale in terms of the threat to democracy, I mean, 9/11 was a tragedy. We lost thousands of lives in a horrific way that we still mourn to this day. But when you look at something that is an attack on democracy, something that could actually bring about a fundamental change to American governance as we understand it, 9/11 is nothing compared to January 6th.
What is wrong with these people's minds? I mean, this is some kind of Trump derangement syndrome. 9/11 was nothing. It was nothing compared to January 6th. That's the guy who was fired by the FBI because he was so blatantly biased, attacking Donald Trump, promoting the Russia hoax. He was so bad. It was so obvious that even the FBI, which is actually the military wing of the Democratic Party, even the FBI had to let him go. And that was great news for MSNBC because now he's an analyst. And he's there to tell you that 9/11, it's not even close. Can't even compare the two. January 6th was so much worse. And of course, Nicole Wallace just nodding along. Well, she set it up by saying it's the worst in history. Listen to Strzok's take on his tenure as an FBI agent and just how upstanding it used to be. You know, they're calling for the FBI to be more aggressive on the January 6th protesters. This again is Peter Strzok, clip 10.
I mean, I think when you look at any number of us who had our actions unpacked and looked at up, down, left and right, both surrounding the investigations of Secretary Clinton and then the Russian interference in 2016, the good news that came out of that was the Inspector General coming out and saying we found no evidence, none, documentary or testimonial or otherwise, indicating there were any improper motivations behind anything the FBI did. And that gives a measure of reassurance to the American public that the FBI behaved and acted in a professional, appropriate way. If we don't have that same sort of look beyond this clearly troubling, you know, sort of indications of behavior where agents are refusing to take part in January 6th investigations, where agents are suggesting they might sit on leads related to January 6th. I mean, that's actual tangible inaction that plays a real detrimental role in what the FBI's work is.
That's the former FBI agent fired. Fire, no shame. The disgraced former FBI agent saying that the agents today, hey, they're a little bit biased. And if they're not, if some agents aren't participating in the January 6th investigation, well, look back at our history at the FBI. And he even mentions the Russia collusion hoax. It's a hoax. And he's saying, what did he say about it? The FBI behaved and acted in a professional, appropriate way. And he was fired. He was fired by the FBI for behaving and acting in an unprofessional, inappropriate way. There was this video circulating on social media in the last couple of days. It's Ron Paul. That's Rand Paul's dad. He used to be a senator as well. And I don't have the date on this. You can tell by the video footage that it's pretty old. But listen to what he says. Just a little bit of history summed up in a short clip. A little bit of history of your FBI and the CIA. This is clip 11.
You know, most of our history, we didn't have those institutions. The FBI came in during the First World War. And interestingly enough, the one thing that Woodrow Wilson did, he used the FBI to spy on American citizens and actually arrest them if they disagreed with his foreign policy about going to war in Europe. And isn't it interesting how recent they used it in the Vietnam era? Democrats used there, and Republicans used the FBI to spy on 100 different groups in this country, including the churches, who disagree with the policy in Central America. It almost looks like the FBI was designed to spy on Americans who might be disagreeing with policy, especially the foreign policy. But I think the FBI has kept and continues to keep a lot of records on a lot of individuals. The CIA has only been here since 1947. Their record is lousy.
We should have listened to Ron Paul, I guess. The record for the CIA, lousy. And look at what the FBI does, spying on American citizens. This has been going on for decades. And these are only 20th century creations, the FBI and the CIA. 1947. There's nothing in the Constitution about these agencies. But when you listen to them, I mean, it's as if they're God. It's like my father says in America Under Attack. It's will worship. Never mind what you see all around you. This is why it's so effective. In the case of Bill Malusian at Fox News, go to the border then, because they will tell you, hey, the border is perfect. So you actually have to go and show people. And to their credit, there are a few more Republicans that are actually doing that. They're going to the scene of the crime, and they're showing it. And quite a few Americans are going to get to decide in less than 3 weeks which way they want to go. There's a lot, of course, a lot that can happen between now and then. And, of course, there's a lot of cheating that can go on around that election, as we know from the previous one. But looking at all the polls, there's lots of Hispanics, minorities. I mean, for African-Americans, I think I saw a headline just earlier on how it's their number one concern has to do with the economy and inflation. And the best that Joe Biden has on that is that it would be so much worse under Trump. Surprise, surprise. 2 seconds ago, he was saying zero. This is the figure I want to emphasize. Zero inflation. Last year, it was just transitory. It's only going to be here for a second, and then it's over. Now, the inflation is so bad. It's so bad that the fake president and the fake press secretary has to come out and say, yeah, but it would be worse under Trump. This is all that they have. So there's Barack Obama. There's the spirit of Antiochus saying, hey, he's accomplished a lot. This is perfect for my third term. I'm running the show in my pajamas from the basement, just as he joked that he would. And he loves it. He loves what's happening under the Joe Obama administration. Listen to Nancy Pelosi. She's the Speaker of the House. She loves it as well. Clip 6.
And I think that what we have been through with the legislation under the leadership of President Biden, who has done a spectacular job. He's had a better 2 years than most presidents that you can name, certainly in the recent generations.
A better 2 years, 2 years than any president you can name. They really believe it. They're like cult members. They couldn't come forward and say we've done anything wrong. In their minds, the government is perfect. The FBI is perfect. The CIA, perfect. And that's why when you push back, you better bring the receipts. You better show the scene of the crime, because they lie. Carrie Lake, she was in front of a pool of reporters. She got some research from a 20-year-old. Listen to this exchange on election denying, clip 8.
I did a little, actually, Anthony, how old are you?
20.
Are you a journalist?
No.
Well, you did better research than half these people. Let's talk about election deniers. Here's 150 examples of Democrats denying election results. Oh, wow, look at this. This is from Joe Biden's press secretary. Reminder, Brian Kemp stole the gubernatorial election from Georgians and Stacey Abrams. Democrats saying that. Is that an election denier? Hillary Clinton, Trump is an illegitimate president. Is she an election denier? This one says, was the 2016 election legitimate? It now definitely is a question worth asking. That's the Los Angeles Times. So it's okay for Democrats to question elections, but it's not okay for Republicans. It's a crock of BS. Every one of you knows it. We have our freedom of speech, and we're not going to relinquish it to a bunch of fake news propagandists.
That's someone who's drawn inspiration from Donald Trump. That's exactly the way Donald Trump would handle that pool of reporters. And good for her. She brought the receipts. We bring them on this program. We've got to show you so you can see for yourself, so that you can know the truth. Jesus said the truth is what sets us free. What is the truth? Listen to Hillary Clinton. I forget when this clip was, from a few years ago, but she's talking about the 2016 election, clip 12.
What's your takeaway about the January 6th committee and Donald Trump's actions?
I would not be honest if I didn't say I think there was a seditious conspiracy against the government of the United States, and that's a crime. Led by Donald Trump, encouraged by Donald Trump. Was I happy when I beat Donald Trump by nearly 3 million votes but lost the Electoral College? No, I was not happy. Did I even for a nanosecond think I'm going to claim victory and try to get the Democrats to refuse to certify the election? No.
Of course not. I would never try to get those electors not to certify the election. They were working to do. Go back and look at the headlines. And to say nothing of the Russia collusion hoax, she was working with Barack Obama in those last couple of months of 2016 to try to get at Trump in another way, to take him down with this bogus investigation headed up by Peter Strzok, the MSNBC analyst. Strzok, Obama, Brennan, Clapper, Comey, Clinton. And there she is yucking it up with another reporter that will not push back because she agrees. She agrees with all things Clinton, Obama, Biden. And they just go ahead and nod along as they lie. As they lie. I wouldn't, not for one nanosecond would I ever think of challenging the legitimacy of the election. They still challenge it. The 2016 election. To this day, they still challenge it. We've played the montages before. My father says, for 8 years under President Obama, this is America Under Attack, the forces of the radical left were on the march. Even Republican leaders caved in. And that was after they had taken control of Congress and had considerable power to stop the president. So many Republican leaders have just caved into the pressure. They want to appease the enemy. They want to appease the communist left. But there are a few exceptions, and you're seeing more of them with Carrie Lake in Arizona, J.D. Vance in Ohio. You've got Herschel Walker. He stood up to his opponent, Warnock, who's supposed to be. He said, look, you're supposed to be a church pastor. Why are you just turning a blind eye to these millions of babies being aborted, and many of them black babies? There's some Republican leaders drawing inspiration from the prophesied Jeroboam. It says, Donald Trump proved willing to take a stand where they have not. It's quite something to behold him resisting these anti-American forces. My father says he also inspired a few other leaders to challenge the radical leftists and help expose them for who they are. So when you come up in front of a pool of reporters and you get handed a stack of papers, you show them. You expose them for who they are. Show them how they lie, how they cover up the truth. How that they're there just to promote a one-sided narrative. You've got to bring those receipts. You've got to bring those receipts. Getting back to this point about inspiring courage, we all need more courage. Joel Hilliker in 2019, he said, perhaps President Trump has also infused conservatives with some courage and will. His unapologetic combativeness with the left has helped to expose just how radical, unbalanced, and non-negotiably illogical their views are. says maybe more conservative leaders are recognizing the benefit in taking a more hardline approach and are doing what is right in spite of whatever attacks may come. They're being exposed. And as I say, behind closed doors, they're panicking because they've got less than 3 weeks to try to convince voters. They can't just have all of the ballots be fake. There have to be some real ballots in the stack. Otherwise, it would be so obvious they would be caught red-handed. This is from Politico last week. It says, it's talking about these Democrats in these tight congressional races calling upon the Democrat Party to send in some help, money, so that they can put together more ads to try to win these races. And as it happens, the Democrat Party is low on funds, and they're withdrawing funds from some races that they've essentially already conceded. This says here, similar pleas are coming from Texas, Pennsylvania, and elsewhere as frustrated Democrats bemoan that their party's outside groups are unable, or some say privately unwilling, to devote precious funds toward what they see as winnable seats. It says the result is a shrinking battlefield for Democrats that has seen leadership and rank-and-file members alike pressuring the rest of the party, including Biden, to pony up more support in a bid to save the House majority. It says here, Democrats currently have just a 5-seat majority. Well, the article goes on and points out how that the party is not airing ads in 6 of the 14 GOP districts that Joe Biden carried in 2020. They're essentially conceding. This is from CNN, a headline. Biden trains his focus on abortion and gas prices as GOP sees momentum. The red wave is gaining momentum, and so what do the Biden people focus on? Abortion? They're really going to campaign on the right to kill human life, to murder little babies, little unborn babies with a beating heartbeat? Listen to the presidential whisperer in this clip, clip 3.
One of the most extraordinary parts of that decision, in my view, was when the majority wrote, quote, "Women are not without electoral, are not without electoral or political power." Let me tell you something. The court, and if Republicans get their way with a national ban, it won't matter where you live in America. So let me be very clear. If such a bill were to pass in the next several years, I'll veto it.
He had whispered twice, actually. Some of that got cut off there. Mistakenly, but still, there he is, and all of his minions, his supporters are out there talking about abortion, which ranks, what, 8th, 9th, 10th on the list of concerns for most Americans? If this is what they have, if this is all that they have left, it should be interesting to watch. CNN says here, President Biden will attempt to address Americans' concerns about gas prices Wednesday, a reflection of the Democratic Party's imperative to connect with voters. Rising anxiety about inflation, the specter of a looming recession, and the havoc that the stock market is wreaking on their retirement accounts. It says Democrats looking to hold on to their control of power in Washington don't have much time to get the message out. They don't have much time to win over voters. Listen to the candidate for Senate on the Democrat side in Pennsylvania. This is John Fetterman, clip 5.
Do you support any restrictions on abortion?
I don't. I've always believed...
Even in the third trimester?
I believe that choice is between a woman, her doctor, and a God if she prays to one.
So 40 weeks, no restrictions. From day one all the way through to the end of 40 weeks, to the end of 9 months, just kill it. If the woman and her doctor decide that's what's best, he doesn't want to stand in the way of that. You think that's a winning message? At the Feast of Tabernacles, I went through a few scriptures. Just so refreshing again. And again, I'm not trying to paint one side as, you know, filled with filth, evil, and all of this, these sinister motives. The whole nation is sick. And the fact that there are a million abortions happening in the United States every year, I mean, that That tells you everything you need to know about the culture of death in our country. But the Democrat Party is leading the way in that culture of death. They want to establish it as law, this culture of death. You contrast it with the way God thinks. This is from Genesis 1 and verse 20. It says, "And God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that has life, and fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven." God just wanted even the waters to produce life. He wanted the oceans to be teeming with life. Verse 21, "And God created great whales and every living creature that moves, which the waters brought forth abundantly after their kind, and every winged fowl after his kind. And God saw that it was good." You know, a lot of these same people that promote the culture of death, their policy with respect to the environment is just hands off. Don't touch anything. Let it grow. Even if no dressing and keeping, no way. Just let it go. Can you imagine those people like reaching into the womb of a lion or a bear and taking out? They'd probably fight for the rights of animals more than they would human beings. That's a new life inside of that mother. Who's defending the rights of that life? God, though, whether he's speaking of the animal kingdom or the human kingdom, he says, you know, I really love life. I love reproduction. I love fertility. It's not to say God, you know, isn't for planning a family or forms of birth control that don't include murder. God wants you to plan. I mean, think about these same types, they're promoting all kinds of reckless, sinful behavior, including unmarried sex with anyone and everyone. And then the solution in their minds is to get an abortion. It's worse than that, as you'll hear from Stacey Abrams in a moment. She sees this as a way to reduce inflation. Kill the babies. Just kill the babies. And that'll reduce inflation. You see, that is a problem, inflation. So they're now admitting it. And a solution, if you can even wrap your mind around it, kill the babies. What a campaign slogan for these radicals. Satan has a grip on a will worship, just like Colossians 2 says. Verse 26, God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over the cattle and over all the earth and every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." So God created man. And he said, now I want you to manage the creation. I want you to have dominion. I want you to be the leader. I want you to dress and keep the garden. I want you to name the animals. You preside over them. Learn how to be a godly leader. It continues in verse 28, "And God blessed them," that's Adam and Eve, "and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it." So replenish the earth and then subdue it. Lead it. Have dominion. Preside over it. But before that, replenish. Plenish means to populate. So repopulate the earth. It had been populated previously by angels. That's in the Bible too. I mean, these are some deep subjects that you need to study into. Mystery of the Ages, Herbert Armstrong's final work. You know, the one Tkach Jr. wanted to, he had a Christian duty, he said, to bury it. That was right at the end of the transformation. One that started off really mildly, you could say. We're just tweaking this little doctrine here. And then in the end, we've got a Christian duty to keep that book out of print forever. Well, God had something to say about that. God didn't let it happen. Listen to Stacey Abrams. I think this was from earlier this morning. This is her response to, you know, the inflation problem in the United States, clip 4.
"I would assume, maybe incorrectly, but while abortion is an issue, it nowhere reaches the level of interest of voters in terms of the cost of gas, food, bread, milk, things like that. What can a governor, what could you do as governor to alleviate the concerns of Georgia voters about those livability, daily, hourly issues that they're confronted with?
But let's be clear. Having children is why you're worried about your price for gas. It's why you're concerned about how much food costs. For women, this is not a reductive issue. You can't divorce being forced to carry an unwanted pregnancy from the economic realities of having a child.
That's a fancy way of saying, you know, we need to have abortion on demand so that we can, you know, keep control of runaway inflation. These people are sick. They're sick in the head. She's running for governor in Georgia. It's going to be interesting to follow these races in the next few weeks. Not that we want to delve into the politics of it. God's people. I mean, we are ambassadors for Christ. We are here, just as so many of us envisioned over the past week and a half. We are here to promote and to celebrate God's future world. There's not going to be any more political campaigns in just a few short years, as Jesus Christ returns to this earth and rules the earth with a rod of iron. And he has to, because at the end of Revelation 11, it says that the nations will be angry. They're not going to receive Jesus Christ. They're not going to willingly submit to the authority of Christ. That's why he has to rule with a rod of iron and then set up the kingdom. And then as the family of God helps human beings to build a paradise for God, then people will begin to come around and they'll become sold on God's way of life as they live it, as they see it. God said to our first parents, be fruitful, multiply, repopulate the earth. God made the earth to be inhabited with people, with human beings, made in the likeness and eventually the image of God. Genesis 1:26, I just read it. Isaiah 45:18 is the verse that says God created the earth to be inhabited, to be populated. God loves life. He's a lover of life. He is life. That's brought out in John 1. Notice this. John 1, verse 1, it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God, verse 2. Verse 3 says, all things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him, in God, was life, and the life was the light of men. God is life. In Him is life. God is reproducing His life. You can read all about it, as I say, in Mystery of the Ages. I think we have that here on the shelf or here on the table. Mystery of the Ages by Herbert W. Armstrong. He wrote this in the last year of his life. Did you ever ask yourself, who am I? What am I? Why am I? You are a mystery, Mr. Armstrong says here on the cover. The world about you is a mystery. Now you can understand. Now you can know the truth about man, about human life. Mr. Armstrong has something to say in here about abortion, by the way, and God inspired the comment. If you don't have a copy already, make sure you call our operators today and request Mystery of the Ages, the 800 number. If you live in the United States, if you live in Canada, if you live in the Caribbean, the phone call is completely free. It's already been paid for. The number is 1-866-930-3024. If you want to email the show, you can send an email to td@thetrumpet.com. We've got just a few seconds left. Let me see if I can get through one email. It says, I have only recently found you and the Trumpet and have been enjoying your ministry and reading the magazine and publications that I have been sent. For the first time in my life, I have recognized a church that I can honestly say that I believe are the true words from God given to me through you and by the Holy Spirit. I am now in my early 60s, and this is the first time I have had answers to the many questions I have been asking throughout my life. This is someone who's read Mystery of the Ages. I am excited to know the truth, and I thank you for your faith and service. If there is anything I can do to support you and the church, please let me know. As I say, send us an email if you want to hear maybe your own email on this show, td@thetrumpet.com. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.